Stand back! There's a hurricane coming through!
Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com with us for the next hour talking all things Tennessee Titans. Brought to you by Jimmy Kelly's Steakhouse, featuring their new rooftop dining experience. And you can check out PK's latest work at PaulKuharski.com. PK, I want to start on the offensive line and just throw this question at you. And we can kind of take it from there in terms of the general discussion. When are we going to start to see the positive effect from Bill Callahan on this offensive line? Now, look, I realize J.C. Latham is hurt, and obviously that's a problem. So with that in the background, I understand that. I don't think Dan Moore has been very good through the first 2 weeks. We can go back through the talent of the roster on the offensive line. We know that there have been some bad situations that they've had to tackle. However, Bill Callahan has chosen – he chose Nicholas Petitfrere to be his right tackle last year. Gave it the go-ahead, said that's good. I would imagine he was pretty involved in the Dan Moore decision. J.C. Latham was drafted as a franchise left tackle, and a year into it, they're like, nope, let's go over to the right side. He's a right tackle, actually. He's not really a left tackle. And the offensive line still is a big problem. So what's fair, what's not fair when it comes to criticism of Bill Callahan and the lack of positive impact that we've seen for the most part to this point?
Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say, especially, you know, early in year two here, you know, last year maybe he came in and I'd give him a little bit of grace on overestimating maybe what he inherited, saw what existed under Kevin Carter, said I can do better with some of these guys than he did. When that was not the case, then they needed to revamp. All right, he's got new people in Dan Moore and Kevin Zeitler. I think Dan Moore is one of these guys where they got the best guy available, and the best guy available is not as good as you hoped. And I think they acknowledged in a lot of ways, you know, as they brought him in, hey, this is the best guy out there, but he's not, you know, elite left tackle. He's better than what we've had, or he's better tackle than what we've had, and we're adjusting our tackles. Now he started poorly. They seem to really, you know, hint around the edges like he's not going to be great against elite people. And
against,
you know,
bad players, he might be okay.
Yeah. And they made it like, you know, well, in the AFC North, there are a lot of elite people, you know. And then in our first two games, he saw very good people. You know, the Colts don't have a good pass rush. This is the week for Dan Moore to be dominant.
Quiddy Pay's like, okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Quiddy Pay.
Mandor.
Is not the caliber of rusher
unlocked
that the Titans have seen or will see. But, I mean, I don't know how they sign him and don't look at Houston and say, you know.
Oh, man.
The Texans are going to be a substantial problem for this guy. They might not have Myles Garrett, but they have guys who are very, very good pass rushers, and they're going to be a problem for him and for us. More concerning is that their third and fourth tackles, Ole Udo gets, you know, half a game or whatever he got in the opener. They immediately move away from him back to a guy who failed in a backup role last year in John Ajukwu. And the magic that Bill Callahan has displayed over his career, and certainly did in his last stop where the Browns went four or maybe even five deep at offensive tackle and came out of it pretty well in 2023, is just not happening here. You hear a lot of talk about how offensive line depth around the league is poor. Well, Brian Callahan has worked around that. Now, it's gotten worse and worse, I think, in the league. That's fair. But just in 2023, not long ago, he made it work.
Bill Callahan.
Bill, yeah. Sorry, he made it work in Cleveland with scrubby-type players, including Leroy Watkins, who – is that name right?
Watson.
Watson. Watson, who was here and couldn't do the same kind of things that he did in Cleveland. So that's my biggest concern. Like, and it's a very Titan-esque thing that a guy who's done this repeatedly and who's had players play their best football under him has come here and not been able to replicate it in the least. And from a personnel standpoint, when you come into camp and your big competition is between, I mean, they had a lot of other guys, but ultimately it boiled down to the same two guys. Ajukwu was competing with Duncan, and I think we all had a sense Duncan wasn't going to make it because Duncan lacked fire the same way.
We all had a sense that Duncan is bad at football.
Yeah. And that
strong sense.
He had the same kind of problem that Dillard had and that Daly had before him, where there wasn't this passionate desire to get better and be good. And how many times are you going to have guys like that in a training camp battle even? So that Jalen Duncan was even around to be in that fight tells me they're just not doing a good enough job getting guys in the pipeline. Now, Crenshaw Dixon is on the practice squad now, which is where he belonged, and that's nice that maybe he could be a guy next year. But you're playing the long game there, and they need help now.
Yeah, like I think, you know, evaluation is something we obviously put on GM, put on the front office. But to me, and they made this clear from the combine right after they got hired, I mean, Bill Callahan is
Of course
he's like the lead evaluator on these guys, right? I mean, he knows offensive line play better than anybody. Why wouldn't he be? And again, he's earned that. So
where's the disconnect?
Right. And you know, the Petit Frere thing, I think all three of us thought, yeah, he'll be okay. Like, he's fine. He's serviceable. Maybe different degrees. I probably was higher than you were, Robbie. I think you were probably more of my boat, right? Yeah, okay. And if Bill Callahan looked at the tape and thought, okay, I can work with this guy, and then it's just a disaster. Again, I think maybe that's a little more of the intangibles with him. But, yeah, he just hasn't, like, yo, J.C. Latham's a left tackle. Absolutely. That's where he'll go. That's perfect. Oh, yeah, we're going to move him to the right side.
Yeah.
It's like you just instantly lose your the reverse King Midas when you get to Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, their rationale makes sense. Like, all right, we like Latham, and he can be the left tackle. But we went and found the best guy we could find, and he's a left tackle. And so Latham's good on the right. So now we have these two guys. What do we do with them? All right, this is how they sort out. That all sounds good in practice, but get them on the field and get them producing. Now Latham's hurt already. And that doesn't sound like the sort of injury that's going to go away. I hope I'm wrong, but that sounds like the sort of injury that even when he comes back is going to nag or resurface. I mean, you're a game in and you're already down a damn guy in a season where they desperately need their starting five to be their starting five. So I don't know. And then, you know, how do they help him and how effective is the help? You know, and then Njoku is out there. Ajukwu is out there committing penalties. You know, I mean, do they see potential higher ceiling for him, or do we know what this guy is with the experience that he's had, which is not inconsequential so far? And if he is what he is, how did you not do better? How can you not find better? And I understand that there aren't guys out there, but this is supposed to be a guy who could get somebody and given a month of camp with him, shape him into serviceable. Where is the serviceable?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Santa in Portland to the program. Santa, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, Rob, Joe, Paul. It's my current time to call in and defend Brian Callahan.
All right.
Someone has to take up his cause. I think there's got to be a time, sometime, when we start blaming the players for not learning what they're supposed to learn. I listen to Paul's podcast, too. I'm a new subscriber. It's really good stuff. And, Paul, you mentioned something about punishment for some of these stupid things. I don't know what punishment is available under the collective bargaining agreement that – coaches have available to them, so that when a Kevin Zeitler, who's supposed to know the rule about being ineligible downfield, clearly didn't know the rule, maybe he gets fired. goes downfield, you can do something about stopping those things, false starts and things of that nature. Just talk about that a little bit, if you will, and you guys enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
Well, I mean, you can get fined for certain stuff, and you get run at practice. It's typical that there's running at a Monday shakeout for penalties. That's kind of a traditional thing. But, you know, I do think we tend to skip past players too often on this stuff. You know, John O is out there committing penalties. I said this in a podcast after the game. All right. You could be as down on Callahan as you want. But why would you think that he's not being coached to do the proper things by a veteran offensive line coach, as opposed to thinking Ajukwu is messing up? I mean, which side of that argument are you taking?
Yeah,
I think he's being coached to do the right things, and he's not doing them.
That's fine.
Well, here, so why are we not be more on the upset field with him than we are him with this coach?
You shouldn't have picked him. He shouldn't be on the field. And when you have 13 for 130-something, yeah, I'm going to start looking at the coach a little bit.
Oh, I am too. Overall, there's a thing. But I think to get there, you have to say these players are fed. I wrote about penalty offenders last week, and I still think a lot of instances – a guy is simply over. If you're false starting, you're false starting. I think in the Titans situations, a lot of times, because the coach is telling you.
Because you
shouldn't
be on the field.
You've got to hold. Yeah, well, because you shouldn't be on the field. Right. But the coach is telling you, you've got to wait for the snap. You've got to wait for the snap. And inherently in your brain, you're thinking, this guy's about to kick my ass, and I got to get started as fast as I can. And you're going to make that mistake sometimes because you're worried about getting beat. And yeah, the fact of the matter is, when you do start on time, you are getting beat regularly. Why? Because you're not as good as the guy across from you.
Right.
Right. So the root of the penalty is you're not as good. Now, I don't want to defend Brian Callahan, but it's not Brian Callahan. Well, it's not Brian Callahan's fault that at so many positions the Titans are not as good as the guy across from them. That's a systemic Titans problem that's been going on for some time. And Borgonzi could only do so much to the roster in one season, and we've been saying that season after season, but we've been through three GMs in 4 years, and the roster's not that good. So I'm not forgiving Callahan for not getting through to the player, not the false start, and I'm not forgiving the player for false starting, but I think the root cause is the player knows he's not good enough to stop the rusher, and in doing anything he can to stop the rusher, he's prone to false start.
Well, I'll respond to that coming up next. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025 on the Titans front. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharsky with us from paulkuharsky.com. Rex Road has a text message that he is very excited to read on the text.
Must
line.
Be critical of me. That's all that gets him
why
this
would
excited.
You why would you assume that? Maybe it's praising. I read Adam's text earlier praising your podcast. He likes your podcast.
You weren't that excited about
we
that.
We got a lot of people liking the podcast today.
Yeah. Okay, so here's Bob in Mount Juliet says, what happened to Paul? He's become a yes man for this organization.
Oh boy.
Not blaming the coach. I thought Paul was in favor of Cali's Pee-wee program, and now it's not his fault. Did they hire Paul like Jim Wyatt, and I missed it? You and Jim Wyatt working together.
Oh, yeah, yeah. look, Callahan is culpable for much of what's going on. But you can't just blanketly say that he has done I think to say that there's absolutely nothing. This is the question that I face. Name one thing that he's done. Well, do you like Iowa Manor?
So this is – okay, so –
you like DK?
Let me –
because I think his hands are okay. – his handprints are on those.
Okay. So you want right here to give him credit for people they drafted, rookies that they drafted, who I agree, they're promising
and
players.
And they drafted him for them, right, for okay. his offense.
So then why is there no blame for him when the offensive line choices are bad? When the
I am
choices,
blaming him for, okay, in part.
It kind of sounded like you were sort of trying to take that away from him.
Well, okay. Certainly his father, who we know has power on the offensive line in a way – more power per position coach than any position coach on the team.
But the big point you make, which is that the roster is crap, which we all agree with.
Yeah.
Again, as time goes on in a coaching tenure, I have less and less. Oh, it's I can't put it on. Yeah, you put it on these guys. I whatever the whole level of input he has, if they aren't taking his input, coach's input, then it's a totally dysfunctional organization, right? You agree?
I agree.
You have to
agree. But
so,
John,
I have less patience for the roster's crap. What is this guy supposed to do as time goes on? We're in year two.
I understand that, but are you prone to blame him more for John Ajukwu? Or credit him more for Elik Iomanner?
I mean,
I think that's a sliding scale there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
You got
Robbie?
A second-year crap backup tackle,
yeah,
and a first-year guy who's ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying Brian Callahan doesn't deserve credit for that, but I could also take the Cam Ward part of this too. Like Cam Ward, I think he's looked fine. In the first two games. Now, some Titans fans are getting way out of control with what he's looked like through the first 2 weeks.
Agree.
That have somehow convinced themselves that because he made the one throw, which was great play, that the Titans are winning multiple Super Bowls moving forward. And I get it. You want to be excited about the quarterback. His numbers aren't good. He does not have his completion percentage? 50.8?
Yes.
Like, it's not very good. But, he's made some nice plays. Iomanner has made some nice plays. DK's been really good on special teams. Like, how much credit does Brian Callahan get for that? I don't know.
I think some.
Yeah, some is fair. But, I could also, on the Ward part of this, I keep waiting for Brian Callahan to have, that breakout game where you look at it and you just say, God, I mean, that was really well called.
That's a well-coached team.
And I think Cam Ward and the positives that he's displayed this run, a lot of Titans fans would say, oh, yeah, I mean, that's why he was drafted number one overall. But that has nothing to do with the coach. The coach is not elevating that right now. And, frankly, it's hard for me to argue against that. That's kind of how I feel.
I mean, the one play he made Sunday
was off script.
Nothing to do with the coach.
Yeah, we need to see a better script for him to do things off script.
And for him to do things within the script.
Yeah. But –
And for Mandor to close up.
And Cam's completion percentage needs to go up. He needs to not skip lock. Jeff Fisher famously said, and this was a big beef with Jeff Fisher, never pass up one to get to another one.
Yep.
Well, Cam's doing too much passing up one to get to another one. He's got Lockett open, and he's going past Lockett to something that's more complex and more difficult, and they're missing that when he's got Lockett open for 8. And who could potentially run for 12. Now, how much of that, and Callahan's response to that was, well, he's a hunter and he's prone to hunt. Well, they've got to coach him. There are times to hunt and there are times to take what's
gather.
There. Yeah, gather. He needs to gather some of that underneath stuff. I mean, the Cam stuff has not been by any means magical. That one play was magical.
Yeah, great play.
And maybe the standard's down. He's not killing them by any means. And a lot of rookie quarterbacks, when they see things, and I'm not just using Levis as an example here, but a lot of rookie quarterbacks early, when they see things they don't recognize or understand, do dumb stuff. And his dumb stuff quotient is low.
Yeah, which is good.
Even his pitches, underhand pitches, are actually to a
they worked.
Or someone on his own team. Yeah. So that's a good thing.
He was at least looking. He was looking at the guy uniform. Too. He underhand pitched it, and he saw him the whole time. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. I prefer the no look miracle flip.
We'll have more with PK coming up
miracle
next.
Whip.
Take more of your Titans thoughts. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road 1025. The game. Welcome back in Robbie and Rex Road 1025. The game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. So, PK, I want to get your thoughts on the conversation we had earlier in the show. Cam Ward, to this point, been pretty effusive in his praise for Brian Callahan. And we know Cam Ward has talked about, Treylon Burks being a top 5 wide receiver in the league, and he's been a little out there with some of his comments. But he has talked about Brian Callahan and the desire on his part for some stability and continuity and keeping those things together He was talking about, you know, he hopes Brian Callahan is the coach around here for a long time and that they're working together. And I would say at times it's almost gone out of his way to talk about Brian Callahan and to praise the job that he's done. You know, we know the situation around Callahan. He's 3-16 right now as head coach. And his job status, barring some massive turnaround here for the Titans as the season goes on, is going to be a constant talking point with this fan base and with us here as we try to figure out where this is all headed. What do you make of Ward, his praise for Callahan, and when it comes down to it, when it's time for this decision to be made, how much stock do you think gets put into Ward and how he truly feels about Callahan, be that from Borgonzi, Brinker, Amy Adams, Strunk, whoever?
I mean, it's so early, right? Now, I know it's hard for fans and for some of us to envision things changing because they've been the way they've been for so long already. He's the change agent. So if things can change to some degree with him, then what he's saying makes sense. You know, one of the things he said after the game, I asked him kind of, isn't it inherently difficult because there's a short game inside a long game at play, right? And he said, I wouldn't call it playing the long game. I'm trying to win every time I step on the field. That's our mindset as a team. I just think we have to do it at a faster rate. We've got to continue to have more urgency. We've got to get better every day. The process is all about patience, but at some point it just comes to you. You've got to go take it. There's no signs of them going and taking it. If we could see some signs of them going to take it, I think maybe some attitudes would shift. Maybe the building would feel comforted and comfortable and all of that. But Cam Ward's feelings about Brian Callahan are good now. If it keeps going like this, how long do they stay good? Or is there a point at which he says, you know, I felt a certain way, but based on what we've done with what we have, I don't feel that way anymore. Now, he's not going to say that at the microphone to us, but I think at some point at the end of the season, or maybe earlier than the end of the season, he'd be asked. Because if you look at the power structure of this team now, we know it's Brinker, Borgonzi, and I think barring Ward being terrible, it's going to be Ward. And I think Ward will have some say-so. And I think if Brinker's not asking him, if Borgonzi's not asking him, Strunk should be asking him.
Well, that's, yeah, a couple questions on that. One, do you think that he is, especially being intentional with some of these things? It seems like sometimes he says these things without really being prompted to say these
things. The first time he was prompted, the first time Teron Davenport was working on something and asked him. The second time that he said something big about the continuity, I think he was unprompted. And this was a little bit of an endorsement, what I just read, and that was not a Callahan consistency prompt at all. So three times he's talked about it, one time prompted, two times unprompted. He really craves a life of not having to change again. He changed by choice, going from Incarnate Word to Washington State and Washington State to Miami, because that's the path he had to take. But he doesn't want to have to take that path again. He craves a comfortable, familiar, steady build.
Yeah,
which is a smart thing for a kid to crave.
Well, and also I believe that he likes Brian Callahan. Callahan's a likable person, I believe. But Brian Callahan knows football. He knows offense. He knows quarterback play. I'm sure he's been very impressed. But like you said, then okay, if the results are going bad, then. So then we got into this earlier, and you mentioned it, but what is the norm, or what kind of different things have you heard over the years about like a front office approaching a quarterback to talk about a coach, or an owner approaching a quarterback? You know, because to me it's like if you put someone in that room and say, Cam, what do you think of Brian Callahan? Like he knows he's sitting there right now deciding the fate of his coach, right?
A lot of power.
Kind of an uncomfortable situation, I would think, for a lot of people. But how do you think that goes/would go with these people?
The higher up boss asks you to rate your day-to-day boss. I don't know. I do think he's got a good head on his shoulders, and I know he kind of understands what went on last year, but he wasn't here for it, and so he shouldn't speak to it. But I do think that they'd be wise to ask him, and that he's going to have to assess more than, you know, the meeting room and the week of preparation and everything, but the game day and what the coach gets out of them. I think it'd be unwise not to ask him. I mean, if they're at a decision point, if they're considering things, and it feels like they're going to be on a path to considering things, I'd want his input, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Would be actively monitoring, observing, talking to as many people as possible, trying to see things for myself beyond putting him on the spot. I think if you're, you know what I mean? And then other people were asking, of course, about, okay, so how are you going to give this kid this kind of power? Which, like we were, it's like,
have a mature enough organization to be able to weigh your quarterback's input and not base everything you do off of it.
Absolutely.
Like it doesn't have to be you don't ask him anything at all or he gets right. all the power.
Right.
There is a middle ground there. And the inability to understand this is freaking mind-boggling
exactly.
to me. It's mind-boggling to me.
And
this
also,
is how every competent organization in the NFL operates. All of them.
Right. And when you're having the conversation with him, you're not having a conversation about should we hire him or should we keep him or should we fire him.
You just want your evaluation of
him.
How is it working with him?
Yeah, and it's a piece of a bigger conversation where it's not like blatantly obvious, like,
we're calling up the quarterback now, everyone, to have a conversation with him about the future of our coach.
Yeah.
But look, I understand why right now, fan-wise, it's very hard to see where a switch is going to flip for Callahan and things are going to click in. It's not impossible that that happens, but right now it's hard to envision.
How many 3-19 coaches have gone on to
turn around?
Good
I mean,
things?
You look back at people like Tom Landry and
just 3-16,
and Bill
three
Walsh.
3-16,
yeah,
Bill Walsh.
Three more lines.
God, I'm sorry.
Tom Landry, Bill Walsh, and I think. Chuck Knoll all started horribly. Now, that's ancient history, and the league doesn't have patience for that kind of thing anymore. But some tremendous coaches had some awful starts.
That was back when, I need to complain about our coach. I'm writing a letter to the editor.
And to your point.
Let me get out the teletype.
There are examples of that, for sure. And there, I think, Dan Campbell in his first 20 games was 4-15-1, I think. So there are some recent examples of it, too. You know what there are also a lot of examples of? Coaches who start that poorly and then just stay that bad, right?
Like
and then eventually you
99%.
Just
go back to being a position coach or a coordinator.
Yeah. So, Brian Cal, the bottom line is, regardless of how you feel about everything that's gone down and their process to get here with Brian Callahan, the bottom line that I think is inarguable, the odds are way stacked against him right now. They just are. From everything from – we talked about the stat in the offseason of teams who draft that number one quarterback, how many coaches actually get through the next year. It's not very high, right? The odds are stacked against Brian Callahan being the long-term coach of this football team.
And I got a lot of stuff.
Unless Harrison can save him.
I got a lot of stuff. Yeah, I'm trying. I got a lot of stuff like, why didn't we hire Harbaugh? Why didn't we hire Dan Quinn? Why didn't we hire McDonald? Well, I mean, there were easy answers at that time. First off, John Harbaugh wasn't coming here, but you were getting out.
Were they talking about Jim, maybe?
Jim, sorry. What they wanted to do was get out from the big personality of Mike Vrabel. They weren't going to hire an equally big personality, and that was understandable. And they wanted a
good coach would be should be the North Star there, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
But also, he got a much better situation in L.A. And then the other two were defensive head coaches, and they wanted to get out from defensive head coach where the coordinator was going to constantly be a problem.
Yeah, that's the
so it was not unreasonable for them to go the direction they did. And then people make it like Brian Callahan was some big outlier, like a big surprise. He was in the pipeline of attractive coaches. Carolina liked him. Atlanta liked him. He was probably getting a job in that cycle. So it's not like the Titans went like way off the map and pulled some big surprise.
No.
Like now
sometimes
it looks
the conventional
bad.
Choice is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it just doesn't work out. And again, like.
And that's Titans luck and logic. Yeah. You know, it's the Wizenhunt thing.
Now, if it's going to
DNA,
turn around.
Would you call it the DNA?
Yeah, it might.
Like, it's got to happen soon, right? Like, you know, I understand this is the NFL, and we don't see in-season coaching firings that much. But I'm going back to what I said at the beginning of the year. And, you know, we did our predictions before the Titans season started, Joe. And if you'll remember, I think I had the Titans at about 1-9 through, like, the first 10 games. And people were like, well, how could you possibly have them that bad? I'm like, look at the schedule. Like, go, I think, and the one win I had was against the Colts.
Coming
right
up
this weekend. I was like, look at the schedule. Like, can you imagine right now that pass rush that Houston has going on the road? Arizona's 2-0. I have no idea how good the Raiders are. The Patriots, like, there's some winnable games in there. But, like, they're going to be favored to lose almost all of these coming up.
Tom Brady,
I don't see who they're favored against. And I think the city's really going to – I mean, if you think it's a tinderbox right now, when Vrabel comes here and does what Vrabel's going to do, I think that'll be a new low.
Well, the Vrabel's team is that good, but yeah.
I don't think Vrabel's team is that good either, but I think Vrabel's pretty good.
He's going to come in here and just wrestle Callahan in midfield?
I think they're going to need – I've said this already, and I'll say it consistently. Whatever you need to remove blood from an artificial turf, they should stock that.
Jeez.
Wow. I got dark. What are we, Game of Thrones all of a sudden?
615-737-1025.
Order it now. Look out for the tariffs. Budget.
Couple more thoughts to get to on the Tennessee Titans front with PK coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game. Paul Kuharsky brought to you by Jimmy Kelly's Steakhouse. PaulKuharsky.com. You can be up to date on the latest Titans information. PK, what did you make of L'Jarius Sneed, who we saw a lot more of on Sunday against the L.A. Rams?
I had mixed feelings, to be honest. I think he made Stafford make some tough throws, but I'm about to post a film review of him from Drew Beatty, who does these things at PaulKuharsky.com now. And he's smarter than I in reviewing the film, is very encouraged by what we've seen. They need him healthy and out there because the depth after him is just not nearly as good as it should be or maybe felt like. I think Daryl Baker might have been a semi-one-year wonder. His play is not as good as it was last year. Marcus Harris may be coming on. But look, you need a clear-cut number one guy in today's NFL, and it's looking like Sneed can be that to some degree, complicate things at least a little bit for somebody like Davante Adams, who could have done much more damage than he did. And I think he'll get better, Sneed, week to week, provided his body allows for it.
I'm sorry, like, this is probably me succumbing to trolls again. I'm obviously very bad at that, but like both of these, YouTube and the text line, the whole, you know, play calling head coach, and that, I mean, guys, this is happens all over the league. Brian Callahan was not coming here to be the offensive coordinator to call play. He was the offensive coordinator at Cincinnati. If he gets, as Robbie has said, if the play calling thing gets taken, he just fired. Can we stop with that? Yeah. Are you just trolling? Tell me. Admit it.
They're desperate for somebody else to call plays. And like you're saying, if you take plays away from him, you're
he's done.
Basically, yeah.
The reason for it, as Ian explained, is because these coaches lose their head coach, they lose their play caller, and then they have to keep replacing their play caller because, again, everybody wants the head coach who comes in to call plays like the Bears just did with Ben Johnson, and it's all over the league, the Vikings, the Bengals. This is the hot thing. Now, more people like Brian Callahan fail at it, as he has done so far,
it'll change.
Well, then, yeah, maybe it becomes there. But the idea of not losing your great play caller to a head coaching job is appealing.
And by the way, if they're replacing him, I would expect them to look for the same kind of thing.
Same sort of thing.
I would.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's like.
No, they need that. That pool needs to replenish. I don't know that there are super obvious play calling coordinators who are head coaching candidates
because a bunch of them have been.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury is the one.
Yeah.
And by the way, but when he's been a head coach, that's been very good. That's both in college and the pro. Right.
But he's probably getting a second chance, provided that Washington continues on a good track. But, like, there's danger to Cliff Kingsbury.
No doubt. Absolutely. Jacob on YouTube asking if there's any update on Kevin Winston and when he may get on the field.
I think the rehab has been a little bit spotty. A little bit up and down, and they're not going to rush him. And Condre Diggs, I think, has been good so far. So I don't feel like they feel – they're not going to hurry him. So I would think another week or two at least.
So do you share Robbie's confidence that the Titans are going to beat the Colts on Sunday?
I think it's easily their best chance in these first three games.
Oh, boy. There's some very excited Colts fans that are all over these chats.
No,
I'm
not going to pick them to win until they win.
They're winning the game Sunday.
Oh, they have to win a game before you pick them to win a game?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it'd be foolhardy.
How brave of you
to take another
point. Why aren't you picking them?
Well, maybe you should see if they win Sunday and then tweet out, I picked them to win this game.
No. I don't pick games.
They just won. I pick them to win.
I don't spend like whole episodes making picks. It's not what I do.
Oh, okay. Do you make picks or not?
I don't.
No, he doesn't.
Once in a while, I have a strong feeling and I'll say something.
Well, we're going to force you to make a pick every week. What's your pick?
I'm not going to make a pick.
Make a pick right now. This is our show. That's great.
No, thank you.
Fart ye, I won't do what you tell me.
You make a pick. It's purely a coin flip guess.
What do you think is going to happen? That's not some boy, that's so hard question.
I think they've got a better chance to win than they've had the last 2 weeks, but I have no reason to expect them to win until I see that they can win.
You
the
mealy Titans mouth coward. Mealy mouth coward.
What's your pick?
Colts by 20.
Here's what you don't have to do. Walk in the locker room having picked them to lose by 20 when they win and everybody go, Rex Road, you said we were going to lose, you jerk.
Yeah, I've never dealt with that in my life. Yeah.
Well, you're not dealing with it currently.
Yeah, that's why they're mad at you.
Like when the coach is going to come on so that you can watch his press conference.
Yeah, they're mad at you for picking him to lose, not naked videos of them in the shower.
Come out and be at the press conference.
Let's have some perspective.
Do not text me about the timing of the press conference.
BK, thank you, sir.
Why does he take a half hour to get to the press conference?
He's punishing you personally. Start putting a timer on.
You need to defend him a little harder than you did today, but you tried. You tried.
Yeah, I tried.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Don't lock.
Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.